Welcome to 60 Minutes with Giovanni Zucchelli. I'm Arturo Bertazzi. Giovanni Zucchelli, ciao, come stai?
Tutto bene.
Dai, facciamo un po' in italiano all'inizio.
Ok, tutto
Dai.
Bene.
Com'è andato il viaggio?
Molto bene. Direct flight? Very nice.
Fantastico. So, per me, Giovanni, facciamo la parte in italiano, te lo dico, è abbastanza emozionante, perché di solito noi ci incontriamo e facciamo piani, parliamo di le cose che dobbiamo fare, però adesso sento quasi la responsabilità di intervistare Giovanni Zucchelli, per cui aiutami in questa intervista. So, yeah, Giovanni, I don't have to introduce you, everybody knows you. It's really an honor for me to have you today and a pleasure. And when we start this conversation with the clinicians and this one with you, I always think about the first time we met. Do you remember the first time we met? Of course. You don't, but I do. Because of course you meet in 2015.
It was in a bar.
Very good. It was in a bar. It was a coffee place.
Yeah, it was a coffee place. I don't know which city because I never know the city where I am.
Must have been Bologna.
It was in Bologna?
Must have been, yeah.
Ah.
And I was very nervous because, of course, I have to convince Giovanni Zucchelli to try Mucoderm. And I always remember this moment because I was showing you Mucoderm and my hands were slightly shaking. One, because I was nervous, and second, because my handling is very bad. I can never be a doctor. And then you went like this. So my hand was like this and you went, stop. Stop trembling, it's okay. And then I thought, wow, nice. So that was the first time. 2015, but then we started working together. We did a lot of trips together. Do you remember any of the things?
Many trips. I remember, I cannot tell you all of them, but I really remember that we were everywhere together. And it was so nice always to stay with you. You know, it was, you know, we are friends now.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay, so this is already going perfect. I remember the BTD Moscow.
San Pietroburgo.
Exactly. And I was famous because...
In the boat. Remember the boat?
The boat?
We were in the boat.
No, I don't remember the boat.
In San Pietroburgo. The boat in San Pietroburgo. It was a boat. We did the whole trip around the city in the boat, and it was, you know, I remember it.
Ah, nice. But yeah, what I remember
it's strange because everybody remembers different things of the same things, you know, it's nice. But I remember it. I remember Colombia. I remember many places.
Do you remember when we went up the mountain in Colombia?
Yes, I remember this.
Yeah, we took the funicular to Montserrat. It's a mountain in Colombia. Oh. Yeah, in Moscow was amazing because there was this hotel, it was very baroque.
Yeah, I remember with the old Porsche. You remember the Porsche who came us to take to the hotel? And it was, you know, typical of
But what was impressive is the line of people waiting to take a picture with you.
I remember,
it's like, I don't know, 100 people?
Oh, yeah.
So how does it feel to be a star? I always thought that if this were music, you would be David Bowie or Joe Lennon.
I have to tell you that most probably this is what, I don't know, I have to say, but it's really what motivated me more in my life. The warmness of the old dentists coming from the all over the world, every single place where I was going, there was so much enthusiastic to make a picture with me, to look at me, to speak at me, to have a sign from me. You know, most probably because I would have been a football player.
Of course.
But since
were you
not
good at playing
able
football?
To do, I was quite good, but because of my character, I could not.
We will talk about your character maybe.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it's incredible because it's really a personal success that I feel so much important in my life, and this also from a psychological point of view, I think has a lot of meanings, but I have to accept this. But this is really what made me, you know, given so much during my lecture and during my courses, because people, I really feel the love of people. When I get down from the podium, there is always a lot of people that is waiting for me, and this is everywhere in the world. And this is most probably what makes me so happy of my profession. The all other things, it's something that I don't consider as much as important as the, you know, really the warmness, how people like to stay close to me for a picture.
But why is that, do you think?
I don't know.
I mean, on one side...
Because from one side, I'm not so... I have to tell you that most probably is because I give a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it is because during lecturing, I really feel enthusiastic of what I'm saying, and this is something that people feel. But most probably is really because I like people because they want to learn.
Mm.
My relationship with more important people in my field is not as good as the relationship I have with the old people coming to the Congress. I have very, very good relationship with dentists coming from all over the world. While if you ask me what is the relationship you have with people that has the power in your field, is not as good as it is with these people. And this is most probably because really I feel the warmness and the need of these people to learn from me and to know me much more, you know.
But because when we were in Moscow, I remember I was in the, you were of course doing the lecture, and I was in the audience, and I was hearing people like, there was a case, a clinical case, maybe you remember, there was a clinical case that it was really reconstructing the soft tissue, and people were like, completely amazed at what you could do from the initial state to the final outcome. And so, of course, the fact that you are such a genius in this field is a thing. But in my view, is also the way you talk on stage. You are very human.
I think it's a combination of the two things. I think that I could also present a case which is not so much outstanding, and people believe it's outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
So this is because of my capability to interact and to get insight to the people, you know, what they really would like to be and what they really would like to do, independently if they are able to do it or not. And obviously, I have also a talent in surgery, and so this helped me. But I don't think that one is enough. You know, you can be talent, but you cannot be so much close to people and to communicate so well with people. And so I think this is the only two good things I have in my life, being capable to communicate and also be talent in surgery. That's it. Now we can speak about what I don't have in my life, and we can stay here 2 weeks.
No, that's maybe let's stay positive. But you know, of course, I have millions of questions. But we talked about this because in October or November we saw each other in Bologna at the ITI, and I saw your lecture, and this struck me because you showed one clinical case, and it was so beautiful the way you talked about it. And so it was almost like storytelling, like making again your abilities human. So did you do that on purpose? Are you moving in that direction?
Yeah, it's some years ago
that
I'm really moving. I personally hate, and maybe I did in the past, I cannot say no, to show many, many before and after, before and after, before and after, that you don't give nothing to the audience because you don't show them what is the single steps you have to do in order to gain such a good result. And so it's so important that people understand how hard it is sometimes, how many things you have to control in order to be successful in a complex case. And I like really to show the, you know, the entire procedure. And if I can, I would like not to show the hand, because I would like people know that the people know that I'm good, so I don't have to show them the outcome, you know. But what is very important for me is to show them how you have to manage this case from the first step to the second one, to the third one, to the fourth. Then sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't go so well, but this is also a matter of many, many other things that we cannot control, like the patient. So what is important is that people learn how to do it, you know. The outcome sometimes is good and sometimes is not always so good.
But it almost feels like, so I've seen, you know, I was in a lot of workshops with you, a lot of lectures. It almost feels like you have a mission to bring soft tissue management to everybody. How did in, where does it come from? So why is
that? It comes from the beginning. It comes from the beginning because I started to work with the soft tissues just after being graduated. It was, you know, my one of the first surgery I did in my life was on the rector of the University of Bologna. So try to imagine my boss, my mentor, Professor Calandrello, asked me that I was just graduated to make the surgery on the rector, you know, so this means a lot. And from then I continues to work with the soft tissue, and most probably even because this was a bit against the trend of everybody else that was working on bone. And you know, this is my life, this is myself. Try to be different, try to always think outside of the box. I started to work with the soft tissue, and I couldn't imagine how this decision was important in my life, because now I absolutely believe that soft tissue makes the difference. And I can tell you that almost everybody, you know, let's say, agree with me.
Yeah,
not completely agree, but they cannot agree 100%, but everybody knows that the soft tissue makes the difference in the outcome.
So admission is complete?
No, absolutely not. We have to work a lot into the literature, which is very difficult, very difficult. So there is incredible amount of literature regarding the bone, the role of the bone, the role of the implant surface, while the literature regarding soft tissue, it's still a bit weak, it's more difficult. We have also to overcome many, many, you know, old concept that still it's very, very difficult to, you know, overcome. And so we really have to work a lot for the future, because everybody can say that this is something that only Zucchelli can do, which is not true. And this is most probably the things that I don't like of myself, that people believe that something is possible to be done only by me. But you know my guys, you know my pupils, though, the old people who studied with me, and you know that all of them are capable to do this. And one of the main reason why I do so many courses is because I really want to demonstrate that what I do, it's something that everybody can do. And as I told you before, it's not always true that everything goes perfectly well. Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely something that is standardized and you can do.
I want to go a little bit more in detail. So on the two things you mentioned, why soft tissue management, the old concept. So imagine that we are talking to somebody who's studying or starting practicing. Why is soft tissue around teeth, soft tissue management around teeth and implants?
And you know, what is the difference between soft tissue and the bone? Soft tissue is something that the patient can appreciate. It's something that the patient can see. The bone, it's something that you can show the bone in the X-rays to the patient, but it's not something that the patient can realize. And I always need to make my patient happy, you know. It's my main goal to... I'm working for the patient, I'm not working for the literature, I'm not working for the Congress, I'm working to make my patient happy. And if you want to make your patient happy, your patient should be able to realize and to understand what you did. And this is soft tissue, because what the patient see is the soft tissue, the patient don't see the bone. And that's why I consider that everything should have been started in the opposite direction. First of all, give a tooth to the patient, and the tooth is made of soft tissue outcome, soft tissue outline, you know. So it's incredible for me how much importance has been given to the bone, which is something that nobody see. Why less important has been given to the soft tissue, that is what the patient can see.
But then from a biological and clinical point of view, why, besides the fact that the patient can see the soft tissue, why is...
You know, because the bone, if you start as a periodontist, you know, mm-hmm. If you start as a periodontist, you know that bone loss, it's something that depends on something that went wrong before. So the loss of attachment of the soft tissue to the root went wrong, and so now the bone resorb. This is the history of periodontal disease. There's no attack by bacteria to the bone. The bone do not resorb because the bacteria go to the bone, you know? There is always something that is protecting the bone above. At the level of the tooth, this is called connective tissue attachment, that is the attachment of the soft tissue to the root. And for implants, we have to do as much as possible something that is similar. The soft tissue protection above the bone. And this soft tissue protection means the soft tissue capability to adhere to the suprabony component of the implant, not the implant. The implant is into the bone. The suprabony component, you can call it abutment, you can call it tissue level component if you like to use tissue level implant, but you have to leave something of the implant supracrestal structure onto which the soft tissue can be so well adherent in order to create a seal. It's only by sealing the soft tissue around the suprabony component that we can prevent bacteria to reach the implant thread. Because if the bacteria reach the implant thread, the bone resorb independently if it's thin or thick. And so this is really my concept behind. So it's not only aesthetics, it's not only patient, but it's also to reproduce as much as possible what we have in nature for teeth.
And let's go back to the implant situation. So we are in a per-implant situation. We want to increase or improve the soft tissue around the implant. What are the things that you first see when the patient comes, and walk us through your decision making? So the patient comes, has a certain situation, a certain phenotype. What do you see? How do you think, and what do you do?
Yeah, what is my goal today is to make people understand that what is important is not the keratinized tissue at the buccal aspect of the bone, because since there is the bone, most probably the importance of the soft tissue is secondary to the bone. What is important is to create above the bone, coronal to the bone, and soft tissue thickness, which create the seal, as I told you, the protection to avoid bacteria contamination of the implant thread. And so this is the key of the soft tissue management, to create supracrestal soft tissue thickness that seal around the suprabony component, exactly like the connective tissue attachment makes on the root for teeth. In the same times, by creating supracrestal soft tissue thickness, you can also provide a good emergence profile, a good papilla height. That is something that also the patient appreciates. But the role of the soft tissue, now it's different, is to create a seal in the suprabony component that reduces the risk for bacteria contamination of the implant thread.
And you were mentioning before that not just the Kelly can do this. So what are the tips or the key points that an everyday, maybe a young clinician should absolutely pay attention
to? What I'm speaking about is an increase in the soft tissue above the bone, coronal to the bone. So there is no periosteum, there is no blood supply. And so obviously you cannot use the same technique that you use for increasing the keratinized tissue that is placed on the bone. When you increase the keratinized tissue at the level of the bone, you can use a free gingival graft or you can use some other substitute material, because in this case, the blood supply to this material comes from the underlying periosteum. While you want to create something that is above the bone, so around the prosthetic component of the implant, obviously the blood supply comes only from the covering flap. So it's a bilaminar approach in which a flap has to be advanced coronally in order to provide blood supply to something that increases soft tissue thickness. And this something that increases soft tissue thickness, today the gold standard is still the connective tissue graft. But the real role of the biomaterials, the substitute material, is to substitute the connective tissue graft to increase soft tissue thickness together with the coronal advancement of the flap. Not for sure to increase the keratinized tissue height.
And let's talk about that then. So, of course, as Botis Biomaterials, we have been for 15 years, and this year is the 15 years of Mucoderm. So, of course, we are interested in understanding the difference between something like Mucoderm, what can be useful to you, and, of course, the autologous tissue of the patient. So let us understand a little bit more in detail. So what is the advantage of CTG, connective tissue graft, for example, and what are the advantages of Mucoderm?
You know, it's very obvious that the advantage of Mucoderm is that you don't have to go to the patient palate and take a piece of tissue. You know, that's obvious. And so it should be obvious that why do you have to do this if you cannot? And this is not. Today, we don't have the same outcome with the use of the autologous connective tissue graft or the use of Mucoderm. And this is something that we have to admit, because it's the reason why I'm here. It's the reason why we have to work on this material in order to improve until we are able to say that this is really a substitute of the connective tissue graft. So the difference is that while the Mucoderm increases soft tissue thickness immediately, in long term, it loses some of the increase in the thickness that has been achieved in the short term. In the connective tissue graft, it's exactly the opposite. You can take also a very, very thin connective tissue graft, and what you are expecting is an increase in the soft tissue thickness with time. And so this is a great difference in favor to the connective tissue graft. But today, we are experiencing the opposite problem. That is, the connective tissue graft has such a tendency to increase soft tissue thickness with time that was absolutely unexpected, and this is what we call overgrow. And this overgrow, which makes the soft tissue appearance very, very bad because of the too much increase in the soft tissue thickness, it's the problem of today we have by using the connective tissue graft. So this is the reason why we are trying to go back as much as possible to the substitute material, because it's true that they don't grow so much, but it's also true that they don't give us the same problem of the soft tissue overgrow, that it's very, very difficult, not only to treat, almost impossible, let you tell you, or very, very complex from a surgical point of view, but it's absolutely, absolutely unexpected. So we don't know exactly why it happens more in some patient, why it happens more in some patient biotype, but it depends more where you take the palate from, posterior, anterior. So we don't have so much. I have to tell you, we don't know almost at all why this happens, but this happens so frequently that it's now becoming a problem. And that's why in my everyday practice, unless it's absolutely necessary to use the connective tissue graft, because, for example, I have to increase papilla height in around implants in a condition in which it's completely lost, in which most probably it's still the only material that is possible to be used. When it's time to increase soft tissue thickness at the buccal aspect, I absolutely prefer to use substitute material because I don't have the problem of the soft tissue overgrow.
Wow. And let us understand a little bit. So you use the connective tissue graft, then on a long term you have an overgrowth, and then you have to intervene. And this intervention is not an easy one.
No, what I have to tell you, that long term, it's really long term. What we saw is that there is a further growth in thickness, in volume, even 10 years after the surgery. Mm-hmm. So there is a big, big increase in the thickness from 1 to 5, but there is a further increase in the increase from 5 to 10. And we saw also some cases after 10 years that they continued to grow. And unfortunately, this overgrowth, it's in the all direction. Uh-huh. Means buccally, mm-hmm. apically, and coronally. And this is something that, especially from the patient perspective, is not so nice, because they see that the area that is grafted, it's so thick compared to the other side. And when this overgrowth goes in apical direction, this can also be the reason for bothering, for food accumulation. And so luckily, most of the patients accept this condition. They only ask, is this normal? And you have to say, yeah, it's normal, but because it's not abnormal, because mm-hmm. now we know that it happens, but we didn't expect this.
Interesting.
And the patient that accept, or because you have to tell the patient, I needed to make a surgery in order to solve this this problem, that means you have to elevate the flap split thickness, and then you have to remove the increase in the thickness from inside, and then to reposition the flap. It's not enough to take a burr and to remove the increase in the thickness from outside, because in this case, the connective tissue graft gets out and the color texture becomes horrible. So you have to do from inside. And this is another surgery that most probably is as complex or even more complex than the first one. And the patient don't accept this. Don't accept, because the patient don't want to make another surgery just for reason that is not absolutely necessary. But for those people that tells you, this is a problem for me, you have to make this surgery, very difficult, very difficult. It can be also the reason why the graft becomes exposed from aesthetic point of view. Mm. This is even worse after than before. And it's also something that you cannot charge.
Uh-huh.
For sure, you know?
Yes.
You cannot say the patient, okay, now I have to make another surgery because this connective tissue graft grew too much. The patient can tell you, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah.
You know, so it's something that it's very difficult today. And I have to tell you that it's something that I have to face every single day, because I've been using connective tissue graft for so many years, and now it's long term.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit, what you said before. Like, so you said basically that now you're trying to move more and more when possible to substitutes because of this situation you're experiencing. And of course, in specific cases or complex cases, of course, CTG is still the way
to
go.
The idea today is to combine.
To combine. And how do you combine it?
You have to think about two different aspects, mm-hmm. the buccal aspect and the coronal aspect. The coronal aspect, which means future perimplant papilla, it's something that today we can only work with the connective tissue graft, because it's simple to understand. Overgrow means that this tissue continues to grow. And since in the interproximal area, you have the possibility to change the shape of the interproximal space by reshaping the teeth, changing the contact point, you give more space for the soft tissue to continue to grow. This means perimplant papilla in the future. While at the buccal aspect, this overgrowth becomes terrible from an aesthetic point of view, from a maintenance point of view, and something that we have to avoid. So my idea for the very, very next future is to use substitute material for the increase in the soft tissue thickness at the buccal aspect, which means emergence profile, and to limit the use of the connective tissue graft in the area of the perimplant papilla.
And among the many substitutes in the market, why Mucoderm?
It's very easy to use. It can be, remember that material, connective tissue graft, whatever type of material, has to be perfectly stabilized.
Mm.
You have to fix it.
Yeah.
You cannot apply there, you know. At least with the surgical procedure that I like most, that is the coronary advanced flap, that, as I told you before, is the only way to provide blood supply when there is no blood supply coming from below. You have to fix it. And you have to fix it in the perfect position, so where you need to increase soft tissue thickness. You cannot push it more apically with respect to where you need. And so for me, the stabilization of the graft, 1 millimeter more coronal than the ideal position of the soft tissue margin, is the role. And so since this is something that has to be fixed, you need material that is easy to fix. You cannot use pins, you cannot use big amount of material that you just pack inside. you have to use something that is as much as similar as possible to the connective tissue graft, in to be sutured, to be stabilized, to be blocked, and it should not be too thick, otherwise almost nobody is capable to fix. And for sure, the mucoderm, it's a material that it's so easy to stabilize in terms of suturing technique. You can stretch it with the suture. There is no risk to break it. So it's the material that it's much easier. It's much more similar, let me tell you, in terms of management, surgical management and suturing technique, to the connective tissue graft.
And do you play a little bit with the hydration time? Because, you know, we mucoderm.
I play, and sometimes I do what you don't recommend, so I don't wait. I don't wait so long in saline, because it depends if I need a material that it's a bit more rigid. Sometimes it's something that I like, because if you apply the material that it's too wet, the risk is that by advancing the flap above it, you can compress it too much. And so I like to use the material just after a few seconds in saline, because keeping this space much more, it gives more space for the blood clot to stabilize and increase in the thickness. Sometimes I use the material, let's say, even in multi-layers. And in this case, I prefer also to have a material that is wetted a bit more.
Multi-layers, you mean two?
Like we do for the connective tissue graft, it's impossible to layer, you know, because somebody, then alternative for the graft is to take the tuberosity because it's thick enough. But the problem of the tuberosity, that is thick, but it's not large enough. And since the connective tissue graft main indication is to improve the papilla area, it means that the connective tissue graft should be at least as large as the dental site. And the dental site, it's always about 10 to 12, 13 millimeters. And how frequently you can find a tuberosity that it's so large, ever.
Yeah.
And so in order to have a graft that is of the right thickness, you need to fold it or you need to duplicate. And this is something that you can also do with the mucoderm.
And when you do that, you need to suture.
You can fold it and to place a suture, which is an internal matrix suture, so the two layers remains in contact one to the other. So you can have one side that is double thickness and the other side that is a single thickness in relation to how much you want to increase in the thickness.
And good. So Ben, what about the result then with mucoderm? Because now you start having, remember we met in 2015, so now we start
I have very, very good outcome. Obviously, it's not as impressive as the outcome you may have, as I told you, for the connective tissue graft in the area of the papilla, because today we know the same. We didn't know at the beginning, and now we know that this overgrowth of the connective tissue graft is good for the papilla, but it's bad for the buccal aspect. And but in terms of stability, we know that there is a period in which, with respect to what we gain at the beginning, we lose, and then there is a second stage in which you continue, or it remains stable, or you have some further increase in the thickness, and this is depending mainly on the patient phenotype. But it's a very, very good and stable outcomes.
And now with this clinical cases that we looked at it together a couple of weeks ago, so you start having maybe 10, 12 years follow-up? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's, unfortunately, yes, it means that I'm very old.
Or that, you know, that we have a long friendship.
Yeah, and also that the patient continues to follow me, because, you know, also to have the 11, 12 years follow-up, I don't remember of this case, it means that this is patient that continues to come. And it was so easy when you asked me, can you please give me the very, very, very last? I asked this patient 2 days ago to come to my office, and I make the radiograph, I make the picture, and this was, I think, 12 years follow-up. And this patient continues to come to my office, and this is really the secret of the long-term success, independently on the material use, you know.
If they come back, they're happy.
Yeah, even because if you don't come back, you don't know if you were successful or not. That's obvious. But, you know, the long-term maintenance of this patient, it's the key for the success, independently on the material use.
As to the final one, we are working together talking to each other, both to Kelly, also to think about the future. So what do you expect from the next dimension of biomaterials?
Okay, I'm expecting an improvement. I'm expecting an improvement, and I know that now I'm very, very interested in the combination of mucoderm with hyaluronic acid, because I think this also can be a very, very good biological indication to get the advantage of the hyaluronic acid together with the use of the substitute of the connective tissue graft. I'm expecting some further improvement. If I have to tell you, I'm very happy about the use of also the membranes to be associated with bone augmentation, because it's true that I only work with the soft tissue, but I don't want people to believe that I never make bone augmentation. And that when I make bone augmentation, I like to use bone graft material as much as possible together with bone of the patient, but to secure this material with some substitute, with some membrane that can be easy, again, suture. And for this, in the Jason membrane, for me, it's my first choice, because it's something that you can stabilize so well and you can stretch so well to the periosteum, because it's rigid enough, let me tell you, stable enough to be stretched and to have a very nice tend effect. And I'm also waiting for new materials that maybe we don't have in mind today, but that's why I like to work with this company, because of the nice people and the objective which we have in common to make our patient more happy.
Thank you, Giovanni.
Thank you. Thank you so much.